about 22 minutes now past the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, and Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments and knows a lot about a lot of stuff. And quite often we talk about grapes and wine because what's your title there, Don? You're the head winery guy. You're the vigneron, but there must be a title. What do you put on your business card?
I put on my business card owner.
Owner. Okay. Well, that works. That works too. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Yes, I'm the vintner and vigneron, but more vintner these days than vigneron.
Okay, more vintner than vigneron. Oh, wait a second. Explain the difference between the two.
The vigneron is the guy who manages the vineyard.
Okay. That's the guy with the lab coat and the beakers and the chemicals and the. When does all that go on? All the lab work with your wine. When do you test things?
That's after. We're testing things constantly after okay. Before you start the fermentation, then after the fermentation, and then when you have the wine cellaring, you've got to do tests along the way, and then of course there's tasting trials to be done. Mm-hmm. So there's testing all along.
Well, I've seen your big tanks out there. I just envision you out there in your white lab coat with the Valle del Apache logo on the left breast there and a clipboard, and you're checking temperatures and adding this stuff and subtracting that stuff and mixing up your wine. I mean, your chemistry background comes into great use, doesn't it?
Well, it does. It makes at least the chemistry part of winemaking easier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, the biochemistry and the microbiology and all of that experience helps with keeping the yeast happy and healthy during the fermentation, which is needed so you don't get any off flavors.
Well, you want happy yeast. That would be important. You know.
You want happy yeast.
Do you ever age your wine to music? Say a little. Mozart maybe would make the wine and the yeast a little better. You ever tried that?
Maybe during fermentation, where there's actually something living that could respond to it, but it's in a tank, and so you'd have to have sonar or something.
Well, that's okay. But
just pump in there.
Glue a couple speakers on the side of that tank. So I know whenever I'm fermenting, I prefer to do it with music. It's the way I work.
Well,
We found an article that is fascinating. So often we in fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how science discovers patterns, rhythms, cycles in nature that it then takes and builds things with. It designs processes, it creates products that mimic these patterns in nature. And they're going back and still discovering more things. And now they think they have discovered that trees actually have something akin to a heartbeat. Explain that to us, Don.
Well, obviously, a tree doesn't have a heart, but they... not that they found yet. But there is something interesting that some researchers in Denmark and Hungary discovered. They took some trees... several different species into their laboratory under controlled conditions, and then they watched them at night, or I should say they measured them at night. And what they did was they took a terrestrial laser scanner. This is a new device, or relatively new, that actually you can get a 3D image of a building or any structure that you're interested in. And so they took scans, if you will, of the trees and the plants during the night. And what they found was astonishing, because they saw actually the branches. You might think, well, okay, if the leaves move, we all know that wind comes from the trees wiggling their leaves, right?
So, well, indication of the wind, yeah.
You never have wind unless the leaves of a tree is or other plants are moving, right? So the obvious conclusion of that is that it obviously is the tree or the plant that's making the wind.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. No. Sure, mm-hmm. Of course. Oh. That's the logical conclusion, isn't it?
Wait a minute.
Dave's not buying it.
Wait a minute.
Anyway, yes. Okay. So now talk about something serious. They actually found that the branches of the trees move up and down during the night in a periodic movement. I mean, some had cycles of three. They did this three times a night. Some have cycles of six, depending on the tree and depending on the species. But there was actually movement that they could measure very accurately using this laser technique. And it's not a huge movement. It's not something that we would, you know, you lay down under a tree at night and say, oh, yeah, the branches are moving. Obviously, it's very, very subtle, and it doesn't move very much, maybe a centimeter. Some species, maybe even up to 10 centimeters.
That'd be, what, like 2.5 inches then?
Yeah. Many of them just a very small amount. But there was actually movement, and it was actually rhythmic. So that's why the term the heartbeat, obviously the tree doesn't have a heart. But what does this, what could this possibly relate to? Well, we know that trees transpire and trees need to take water up from the ground, for example, from their root system and surrounding earth to the leaves. And then there has to be movement through the phloem of the plant back down to the roots. So you got to take up nutrients down in the roots, and it's got to be transported with the help of water up to the leaves and then back down again. Photosynthesis obviously needs the sun, so that happens during the day. So what is this movement at night all about? Is that some type of mechanism to help transport, let's say, the sugars that are made during the day down into the root system, so that the root system can grow and expand, and the tree can further grow? At this point, all they've done is the measurements, and they know this happens. Exactly why it happens, they're not sure, but they think it has to do with something about the water system within the plant.
I'm just wondering what could power this, because you could figure gravity lowers the branches, but what then raises it? Perhaps water pressure.
And they're suspecting that it's water pressure.
Mm-hmm. Well, there aren't a whole lot of variables there. Temperature, maybe, has something to do with it.
Yeah, but why? This is really interesting, because how do you get water pressure to increase or decrease, for example? You could see, well, okay, there's a lot of pressure in the, in the branches and the leaves and stuff.
It suggests, doesn't it, that the tree's doing it on purpose? I mean, that it initiates that somehow.
Right, exactly. It somehow, and somehow this is important to the tree's health. And perhaps the next step that they suggest in their actual article is to... let's get a diseased or a stressed tree of the same type, and let's see, what it does. It may have more cycles, or it may have less cycles. Just like our temperature rises when we get an infection, does the tree's movement increase to try to get rid of, an infection, or to help fight the infection? So this could be an indication of, for example, a tree's health. But exactly what's causing it, they don't know. They think it's due to water pressure, but I don't know how
kind of a humanist conclusion. That's almost like an evolutionist conclusion. That is, it maintains that despite this movement, plants must be passive because we've declared them so. In other words, they only react to external stimulus. But what this finding seems to indicate, that there could be an internal plant-initiated stimulus to function properly within its natural setting, So it's that plants may not be passive organisms.
Well, that's right. They may not be passive, as we've originally thought, that there's an active part of the system that we don't know about. And I wouldn't go so far as saying, okay, the plants have a soul, and therefore, it's got some type of spiritual connection. I wouldn't go that far, but it does point to yet. Again, there is so much, so much about life that we don't understand yet. You know, we have all this sophisticated equipment and technology, but yet it's still not sophisticated enough to tell us exactly what's going on.
Well, plants do meet the scientific definition of life, though, don't they? They meet I'm trying to remember back to my high school biology classes, four or five things that an organism has to do to qualify as living. One is breathing, or what's the word for that?
Transpiring.
Transpiring, expiring, something like that.
And expiring. Yeah. It means you die.
Well, eventually you expire. Well, and you produce wastes and that kind of thing. So, but plants qualify as living things, and who's to say that they may not be even more alive than we've ever suspected?
Well, and there's obviously complex systems going on that we have we've just barely scratching the surface on, and this example here, demonstrates that. So, even though man is gaining knowledge at a rapid rate, and the Bible has something to say about that, our understanding is not. Maybe that's because, in a lot of areas, because we have the wrong assumptions to begin with. If you start from the assumption that all of this just happened by chance, then you've got a really, long road to hoe, because you've got to make up everything along the way. Now, if you start from the assumption that, hey, this is all designed from the beginning, and everything that happens is there by design, and this is obviously a necessary part of the tree's life cycle that is taking place, so let's find the design mechanism that makes this happen. And then, therefore, you come from this type of discussion and say, wow, the Creator is amazing, because everything that tree or that plant needs was designed there from the very beginning, and it is so complex that it points to the glory of God. Mm-hmm. I think that's the conclusion that I would come to when you're faced with some of these mysteries that. We discover as we look more carefully at the biological world, for example.
And that's the impression I get every fall when the leaves turn, that they're it's a glorious shout to the heavens, a big thank you. Mm-hmm. And then I guess maybe that's my own mind working overtime, but plants are, and trees in particular, and it interests me that they find that different species of trees have similar cycles, but different times, different distances, different rhythms to them, and suggest that there's a lot more to this than we've ever believed. And you know what else? I think when they continue their experiments, they should play Mozart and see if perhaps they can alter the rhythms of these things.
That would be interesting.
Do we have a supposition as to why they cause allergy reactions in my nose?
It's because they don't like you, David.
I see.
That's why. Yeah.
That's because you've got antibodies that you're reacting to the natural environment.
Well, there you go. You're reacting naturally, David. That's okay.
Just naturally reacting. You're overreacting. You're overreacting. You got to stop overreacting.
I got to slow it down.
Yes.
Talking with Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and member of the board of Creation Moments, I want to recommend to you the Creation Moments website, because it contains a plethora. Yeah, there's a plethora there of information that supports the biblical story of creation. You'll find it fascinating and informative and eye-opening. CreationMoments.com is the website. You can link to it from the Broken Road site. Don, we'll talk to you next week. And thanks so much for joining us.
Well, you're quite welcome.
Bye-bye.
See you, Don. Thanks a lot.
See you, folks.